This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to ExpressPros.com to find your location. That's ExpressPros.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's Hoffman's show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. We're leading you into Nats baseball, so shorter show today. We're done at 6:15. We'll talk a little NBA on the way out, preview the night's games. We'll also get into our non-Commanders-related draft thoughts, winners and losers. What do we call them, Anthony? We don't like winners and losers because we don't know who's winning and losing a draft for years. But hat tips and head scratchers,
I think, sir.
Is what we decided we're going to call that. So we got hat tips and head scratches coming up at 5:30. But right now, I had the great fortune of the lovely and talented Sam Fortier coming over to my house where I have many microphones, and we sat down in front of two of them and discussed the RFK situation for the Commanders. And we started off by kind of peeling back and relooking at how we got to this point, which is where we will start the conversation. And then in part two of our conversation that you'll hear tomorrow, we get into some of the biggest questions moving forward. The full thing will be available uninterrupted in our podcast feed, and will also be available on YouTube at Greg Hoffman and at the Team 980. But part one of my chat with Fortier right now is today's edition of Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Why was this a story that you wanted to cover? As someone who, you know, obviously the Commanders beat, this is a huge story. You guys have so many different people at the post that can do football and non-football things around this team, and you have been on this story from go. What is so fascinating to you about this that you wanted to sink your teeth in and be a part of it?
Craig, I appreciate you asking, man. Like, it's just something that 3 years ago, I remember, you know, they started talking about Prince William County and we're going to go down there. You know, this was under the Snyder ownership. Like, it was my assignment one day, and I kind of got fascinated unspooling the thread of the intersection of business, politics, and sports, I think really interests me, because it's like, okay, we're talking about the mayor's budget and how much taxpayers are going to have to pay. And I know that a lot of people are like, that is so boring. Please don't talk to me about that. But to me, that is just as fascinating as like Terry McLaurin, how do you stack a receiver and or how do you stack a DB and like win the hand fighting early so you can win down the field late? It's just how things work, and it being a field that I was not, you know, super familiar with, it was like, you know, you'd read one article and then you'd be like, wait. So I'd ask a couple sources like, hey, am I reading this right? And then it just like keeps building and building.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm like reading books, and then it's like about stadium stuff. And then it's like, I'm talking about the tax code, and then I like feel like I really have a good understanding of the ballpark fee, which is going to be like a huge funding stream that pays for the stadium. And it's like, oh, I just like.
And next thing you know, you're on Capitol Hill.
And exactly. And then you're like in these meeting rooms, and you're like, you know, AOC is walking by, or Steve Daines is walking by, and you're like, oh, like these are the people who are like, you know, making real decisions for like our country. And it's just, I don't know, like as a journalism nerd, like trying to figure things out, it just was a challenge, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I am a political junkie. Like, I enjoy listening to, you know, podcasts or reading stuff about what's going on. And so I think it's important because explains how the world works. And I think this is one where you take some of the traditional left-right out of it in a lot of ways, especially in a city like DC where everybody's got a D next to their name anyway, and there's still everyone fighting. And it's like, oh, nope, same interpersonal, same like whatever, but this is not necessarily a traditional left-right thing. And I think because of that too, with our current political climate being so antagonistic, like it allows you to talk about this stuff and look at it in a way that if this was, I mean, even when it was still in Congress, like you put out something and then there go the comments because everyone's favorite or least favorite politician is involved. And now that it's in the city council, like I think we really get to see how this legislative sausage is made. And I think that's going to be interesting, eye-opening, and hopefully not terribly disappointing for us over the next 3 months with the negotiations between the team, the mayor, and the city council.
No, absolutely. And it's like how the world works is the perfect way to put it, because to me, it's like, wait, you know, the city council chairman is a Democrat, Phil Mendelson, and the mayor is a Democrat, Muriel Bowser. Why are they at odds? And also, like, the mayor is working with James Comer, like the Republican chair of the House Oversight Committee that's talking about DC's crime bill. Like, how did she forge an alliance with a guy that is like theoretically like interfering in city affairs? And so, like, obviously, I know the answer is politics, but where do they see the advantage in each other was like really fascinating to me to try to demystify. And that, like, her ability to work with Comer was obviously the key, and Eleanor Holmes Norton introduced the bill bipartisan, but it's like, we are not talking about the commanders coming home to DC unless you zoom all the way out. And really, like, back to even when Dan Snyder started having these conversations in 2008, like, this is a story to me that's like 3 decades in the making. And it's a thing that so many people care so much about. Like, when the announcement happened, I know a lot of Commanders fans. Like, that's who I've been writing about for so long. It's like the emotion that people felt and the enthusiasm people felt. It's like, I feel like I just have a much greater appreciation of how we got here because I was able to dig in like that.
For sure. And I think that the joy that people felt this season for those that went to games at RFK back in the day, like, you know, there is some element of nostalgia here that is definitely influencing, which I thought was hilarious at the press conference, because you might have asked the question even about Harris and nostalgia. Was that you who asked that?
No,
or was it somebody else?
It wasn't me. It was someone else, but so, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so he was like, you know, Harris is asked, oh, is nostalgia playing a role here, basically? And he goes, no, and then lists a bunch of things that absolutely fall under the category of nostalgia. And the thing is, though, I feel like with nostalgia, there is an inherent untruth to it. It's like, oh, it's glossy. Your memory is glossier than the reality was. When everyone says the exact same thing, and you have the video to back it up, and you see the stands bouncing, and like opposing players, home players were like, that was the hardest place to play, or the best place to play if you were wearing the burgundy and gold back then. Like, it's just, I understand why it means so much to so many people. And then that's the best memory compounded by the 25 years of the Snyder era and no joy basically outside of 2012. And then you have this past year and it just feels like so many things are going in the right direction. But it is like all that, those good feelings aren't going to be what gets this done. It's going to be the nitty gritty inside deal making and satisfying this politician in Ward 7 and this politician in Ward 5. And what can, and so much of politics is that, right? Like, what can I get for my people? Which I think gets to, or like, what can I do to satisfy my one core belief that made me run for office in the first place? Right. And I feel like that particular thing is like, that's the James Comer angle of this. Like, James Comer is an actual dyed in the wool, red, right wing, not right wing, like, you know, whatever, like right wing economically, small government Republican. And he looked at the RFK site and said, we're paying for this to do nothing. And that's how Mayor Bowser was able to find the common ground. And I'm curious if there's any other things like from those types of relationships that you saw her work or other things that are either untold or undertold that you thought were interesting from that process. And then we can kind of get to what was announced Monday and where we go from here.
Yeah, I think like, so my colleagues, Megan Flynn, Aaron Cox, and Paul Kane, you know, a bunch of us at the Post did like a TikTok, we call it, not like TikTok the app, but TikTok
TikTok
the
Sammy over here. Yeah. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a Post, an actual print article that's done chronologically.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you look back, like her ability to reach across the aisle and figure out that relationship with Comer, and then really like to get everyone on board along the way, because they passed it. I think people should understand they used a vehicle called unanimous consent, which is basically like on the last day of Congress, they put up all these bills that are like super non-controversial, like should we rename a post office in Mason, Ohio? Just things that would pass 100-0. And when they didn't get in like the spending bill at the end of the year, they had to pass 100-0. And if you think about like how complicated and messy and fraught this had been for so long, the idea of it passing 100-0 was far-fetched. It was ludicrous. And so on the last night, you know, you figure out, okay, Steve Daines from Montana, like we have worked with the Wetzel family, the Native American family that's credited with designing the logo. Like you're good. Maryland, who's had a lot of exceptions to this, you're good. Like figuring out all of those pieces. And that took everybody. It was a coalition of the mayor's office, of the team, of the NFL, of, you know, senators themselves. You know, Chuck Schumer reads it at 1:15 a.m. or whatever it was. And he says, like, is anyone opposed? And then no one says anything, and it passes. That's just an incredible moment that, to me, is the political version of Jaden Daniels dropping back and throwing a Hail Mary.
Yeah. I mean, I remember waking up the next morning and just looking at, like, staring at my phone, being like, I'm sorry, what happened? Like, there's it was dead. I went to bed last night, and it was dead. And here we are. And now all of a sudden, that's what, 3-4 months ago at this point, President Biden signs that into legislation. Josh Harris, Roger Goodell are there. Administration changes. And then here we are now with the land in D.C.'s hands. And it was something that I actually wanted to try to understand on our radio show. So Sam and I are taping this on Wednesday, April, what is it, 30th?
30th.
So this would have been yesterday. I had Tom Sherwood, the great Tom Sherwood from WAMU on, who is just legendary political analyst in the city. And I was basically like, you've got Phil Mendelson, the D.C. City Council chair, complaining that, like, I haven't been involved in anything. Like, is this the normal process? Because it would seem like you'd want to work with the mayor's office and city council to do this. And he's like, no, this is actually like how this goes. The mayor does stuff, puts together proposals, and then they'll work on city council. But there's also been some reporting that maybe there has been some more contact between the team and city council, et cetera. So from the time that that bill passes to Monday's announcement, what was happening that you've been able to, that you either were privy to along the way and kind of keeping track of quietly in your notebook, to stuff that you figured out and along with Megan and your team over the last couple of days, what was the process to get from, we got this approved, we're standing in the Oval Office watching former President Biden sign it, to Monday's press announcement?
Yeah, I mean, they had been discussing, you know, a framework of a deal, like just getting their ducks in a row before that. But I mean, they had been talking to Maryland and D.C. It was between D.C. and Maryland. Like, Virginia is not in play at all. But they're talking to both jurisdictions. And I think, you know, things move pretty rapidly after that signing. You know, we're here just 3 months later. And so I think it's just a conversation of like, okay, who gets what at what site? What does it look like? How do we do the parking? You know, who gets development rights over this area? How does that area look? It's just, those are all of the things that you're ironing through. And, you know, at some point, everybody has to present their best and final offer. We don't have the details on the Maryland offer. Westmore said they made a great offer, as you know, you'd expect an executive to say. We don't have the details on that. But DC obviously comes in with an offer that, to taxpayers, in the end, like if you sort through all the numbers, DC taxpayers will put in just over $1 billion in the end. What did Maryland come in at? I would be, you know, that's obviously something fascinating, because what is the gap between what they're willing to accept? I mean, obviously Maryland has a lot more people, has a much bigger budget, but the pull of DC obviously is very strong emotionally. The fans, you know, we did some polling last April that, you know, fans, Washingtonians, and then district residents in particular, and Commanders fans in particular, wanted the team to end up here rather than in suburban Maryland or Northern Virginia. And so Josh Harris and his crew get to a point where they have an announcement. And I would say real quick, because I was doing a Q&A with some of our subscribers earlier, and people were like, hey, what are the odds this ends up like the Ted Leonsis deal to go to Virginia? Because here we are with, you know, a pep rally-esque press conference between an executive and a sports team owner. Like, why is this one not going to fall apart? And I would say two big reasons. One, Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser have signed an agreement. There is a term sheet. Actually, Craig, I brought something.
Oh, Sam's got props, everybody.
I have props. I brought the term sheet. I brought all of the documents that the mayor's office has put out about this. And so, and you know, I've gone through, I've highlighted, so people can see, like, this is, you know,
That's a real legal document
there. Yeah, it's real. So I would point out that unlike, not that, you know, this means everything, but like Josh Harris's signature is on this page and Muriel Bowser's signature is on this page. There was never a signed document between Leontsis and Youngkin. And I would also say that Ted Leontsis had put a lot of money into the area surrounding Cap One Arena downtown. You know, like they have the Monumental Sports Network TV studios. Right. There's a bunch of different things they've done down there. And I think that Northwest Stadium is a clearly worse fallback option for Josh Harris than Cap One would have been for Ted Leontsis. And so
I actually don't think, for whatever it's worth, I think Monumental pulled the Virginia thing to get DC to the table. And that might have been a feature, not a bug, of not having a signed agreement.
I disagree with that. Like going through the whole reporting process, I don't think that's the case. But obviously, like they ended up with something that they wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that Josh Harris and Miro Bowser are both very committed to making this happen. And so that's not to say that, like, so basically to me, the question is, can someone on the DC Council or another grassroots organization in the city pull a Louise Lucas, the Virginia State Senator, who single-handedly basically tanked that deal, can someone do that in this case? And I don't know.
Well, obviously, they're going to vote on it. Mendelsohn, even though he's the chair, like he can't just be like, oh, I'm not bringing it up for a vote. So they're going to vote on this. July is the current imposed deadline. That probably holds. But, you know, Mendelsohn's already like, well, it's not enough time to go through it. And the thing is, now, you know, this term sheet, enjoy it while it lasts, because it's going to change. Like, the thing is that now the negotiations start with city council. And this is where things get fun in terms of, okay, we want the current plan is parking spaces that ultimately become parking structures. Well, I've already heard one city council member Charles Allen tell Grant Danny yesterday that he doesn't like the way that those are done, where the Commanders are going to keep all the money. He's like, no, we should get to keep that money because we're going to own them through Events DC. Like, that seems like a reasonable ask. And that seems like also the kind of thing that you build in if you are Josh Harris to be like, if for some reason they don't pick up on this, like, we'll keep it. But if not, maybe that's a concession we can make. There are going to be certain red lines where it's like, no, that's how it's got to be. There's going to be other things that are negotiable. As you've gone through this stuff, what are some of the things that stand out to you as maybe the most contentious pieces that will be discussed and perhaps tweaked over the next 3 months as city council and the Commanders and the mayor's office all try to come together on a deal that gets 7 votes on city council?
The number one most contentious thing is going to be just over $1 billion of taxpayer money, because when you look at the comparison, I know that, you know, other jurisdictions have done more, but and I know that, you know, their big talking point is $2.7 billion from the team is the largest private investment in the city's history, and I know that like that's their big talking point, but I still think that there are some council members, Charles Allen included, who say like, why are we spending $1 billion? Like, why are taxpayers spending $1 billion? And that's still going to be an issue. Phil Mendelsohn, the chairman, has long said we would love the stadium there, we would love development there, but I do not support taxpayer funding for a stadium. And a lot of people say, like, why should I give a tax break to a billionaire? That's going to be the number one contention. And then also, I would say probably second is, you know, how many events does a football stadium have? We need more housing in this city. And you know, the Commanders are going to come back with, hey, the stadium only takes up 16% of the site. It's a large site. It's a 177-acre site. Like, that's going to be, I think, the fight. And ultimately, it's going to be up to the council and the citizens to decide, like, is this worth it? Because I think that, like, the thing is that a lot of people understand that stadiums in general, stadiums specifically, football stadiums, do not deliver the economic return that the studies say they do. Or, you know,
the city funded
studies find, yeah. Right? But, you know, I've seen, like, in the chat, I've gotten emails about it. Like, there are some citizens who say it is worth the cost because this will be a national stadium. If DC wants to be a big time stadium, why are we having the World Cup here and there's no games played in the nation's capital? Like, that's embarrassing. And so, you know, I think that it's really just going to come down to what can the city council accept, what will citizens accept, and that's going to be the huge sticking point to me.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down. We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the team at 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And again, part two of our conversation with Sam Fortier will be tomorrow at 5 o'clock, where we discuss more about what's next, and also some of the kind of football-y questions. A lot of football fans, as well as just DC, like there's the DC residents. Everyone cares, about what city council is doing, or, you know, could care, I guess. And there's the stuff like, hey, I go to games, which obviously is a large part of our audience, you sports radio listener. But that element of tailgating and PSLs and all that kind of stuff we get into as well in part two. So that'll be tomorrow here on the Hoffman Show. Thanks again to Fortier for joining us. So coming up next, Anthony, we are going to hit our hat tips and head scratchers for the first round, or not the first round, the 2025 NFL draft in total. We did some of this on Friday last week because we had the whole first round to look at, but now we have the full draft. And yesterday we went through one thought from each team's first round, but we haven't had a chance to look totally at the league yet. And I think that's what we should do next. So we obviously have our own list, but I think we should also take nominees from the people.
I like that idea.
Yeah, we don't. 5:30, not a time we take calls often. So you 5 o'clock hour listeners on your drive home throughout the DMV, or if you're watching, you're already home watching on YouTube and you want to get involved in the show, you can leave your hat tips and head scratchers in the chat on YouTube or give us a call, 301-230-0980. We don't do winners and losers for the draft because it's just there's no way to know right now who's won and lost, but we have an idea. We have thoughts, obviously, based off what we thought going into the draft. So who are the teams that you're like, hey, I see you. Nice job with your draft. You give them a nice little hat tip. And there's the teams that you're just like, man, what is you doing? Head scratchers. That's the question. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. We'll take your calls next on the Hoffman Show. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube too at the team 980. The 2025 NFL draft is in the books, and it always takes a couple of days to digest everything that goes on in it. And so we are now finally at the point, Anthony, where we can look beyond just the Commanders and beyond just the first round, and we can look at the draft as a whole for everybody. And we are going to do that in the form of a, I guess it's a new segment, but it's one that I like. We're calling it Head Scratchers and Hat Tips. I actually kind of like that. I think that flows better. Hat tips and head scratchers, or head scratchers and hat tips? I think the latter.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, so now that we got that straight,
head scratchers, hat tips.
Yeah, for sure. So with that said, we got head scratchers and hat tips. Anthony, I'll give you the first pick of the draft here. One, do you want a head scratcher or a hat tip? Or two, and two, which team would you like to talk about their 2025 NFL draft?
One of the teams I like thoroughly, their draft anyway, the Chargers. I think the Chargers sort of counted. I mean, if we're not talking about the Commanders, because I like the Commanders draft as well. But if I'm looking outside of the Commanders, I would say the Chargers. And simply for the fact, I think they did what, you know, the Commanders did in terms of building around the young quarterback. Now, Herbert, he has a few more years of experience.
And a lot more dollars on the contract because of that. He's already been paid.
Yeah, but they just waited too late to finally surround this guy with some offensive talent. I think the talent that was there when he was on his rookie contract was sort of old. They were aging. They were injury riddled. So they didn't necessarily help his success. But now you got Ladd McConkey from last year's draft. And then this year you go with Omarion Hampton, who I'm pretty sure Jim Harbaugh is going to love just because of the style of play that they play. And then they also went out and got Trey Harris. Yep.
Yeah.
Big receiver. And then also, you know, he's a bigger receiver, not the fastest, but they also got another guy in Keandre Lambert-Smith, who's a speed guy, ran a 4.3 40. So I think in terms of just surrounding that offense and, you know, helping Justin Herbert, I really like what they did.
There's also one other player that you have to mention, Anthony. Who they take at 165 overall?
I don't have him on here.
Aronde Gadsden II.
From Cuse.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that. Yeah. He's nasty.
He can go.
He was our guy.
Yeah, so they got a receiving tight end as well. And the thing is, on the edge, like Kyle Kennard's a guy that a lot of people like, the edge out of South Carolina, Jamari Caldwell, defensive tackle out of Oregon, Derek Harmon's running mate there. So they got an offensive lineman. They had a ton of picks. And so they were able to address pretty much everything. But the fact that it starts with Hampton, who's if you're going to take a running back in the first round, you better get value out of that dude. They will use the hell out of Omarion Hampton. He'll be a three down back for them. And he's going to get a ton of carries and a ton of catches. And like, he is a weapon for that offense. Trey Harris, who by the way is one of the cooler stories in the draft, guy that was ready to quit football. He was a quarterback in high school. Do you know this story, Anthony?
Mm-mm.
So he was a quarterback in high school and, he was ready to quit football and really dedicate himself to basketball. And his star wide receiver was like, bro, no. That star wide receiver was Malik Nabers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think I have the right guy. let me confirm this real quick since I'm sitting here in the beast. I guess I can, let's see, Control F, Malik. Yep, I got the right guy. At OV Como High in Lafayette, Louisiana, he was teammates with Malik Nabers. Harris was like a brother and a mentor for Nabers. Wow. So he then switched, and the thing is, like, he was playing wide receiver initially as well, and their quarterback transferred, and they were like, hey Trey, we need you to play quarterback, and he did, and flex bone offense, but then eventually was convinced to stay in football by Malik Nabers, and it worked out for him. So cool story, and I think he's a good fit in there with Ladd McConkey, with Lambert Smith, and all of a sudden they've got some dudes to go. This pains me, Anthony, although I will kind of laugh at what happens 4 years from now when inevitably the general manager and team owner messes up some contract extensions for these guys. I really like the Cowboys draft, man.
Hey, they were one of my teams I have on my list, too.
And I don't know that. Like, the thing is, here's what I'll say about the Cowboys draft. I don't know how high the ceiling is for this draft. Ultimately, you took a guard at 12, rotational edge rusher at 44, and a corner at 76. So those are your top 100 picks. There's a chance that corner's really good. There's a chance he's the biggest boomer bust guy. Siobhan Revelle, the corner out of ECU, 4.4 speed, good size, good length, good ball production, but played at ECU, and he's got some injury history, including an ACL last year. So, like, can he translate from the small school to the big time? How's the knee? Major questions. But if he doesn't get hurt and he has a year last year in 24 like he did in 23, he would have been a top 20 pick in this draft. And so the fact that you get him at 76 is excellent. Obviously, we've talked about Donovan Ezeraku a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things about him that I have real concerns about. At 44, I would have been thrilled to get Donovan Ezeraku. He has a bag of pass rush moves. He's real explosive on the get off. He doesn't have the chase speed to be elite at the NFL level, likely, but he clearly has known how to chase guys down in college. He's got the production because he was the second leader in FBS and the highest sack getter in Power Four conferences in 2024. And then Tyler Booker, I mean, listen to that guy talk for 5 seconds, and it's hard to not love this guy. Offensive lineman mentality, great leadership skills, and I think fits with what they want to do offensively. Like, they want to let Dak drop back and cook, and this dude can pass block his face off. and he does some good stuff in the running game as well. So I think that that's – I don't know as much about some of their later-round picks. You know, Jadon Blue is a guy that a lot of people like out of Texas. Texas has been a running back factory the past bunch of years. There's this amazing Photoshop of the Texas running backs when Bijan was still there. And there's like five guys sitting on the bench, and they did like a top photo, bottom photo. And they put, you know, top photo is the real one with all of them in their Texas jerseys. And it's literally five dudes all in their NFL jerseys now. And Jadon Blue is the latest on that list. Hat tip to the Cowboys. Will McClay continues to be one of the best in the business. And then you just wait for him to mess up the second contracts or let somebody go that they shouldn't, or Jerry to muck it up.
Yeah, I like Dallas as well. And I think for the reasons you all just laid out, but the fact that they got three guys that were being mentioned, you know, to sort of kind of be in a first round mock grade, and Azaraku and Siobhan Revell, I think that just speaks volumes to the value in which they got these guys at. So shout out to Dallas. I mean, to be honest, the Giants also had a solid, you know, draft as well.
The Giants, the thing is, like, I like the Giants draft as well. I like the Eagles draft as well. But the Giants, at least I can go, hey, why are you giving a coach that you're probably going to fire a and a GM you're probably going to fire? Why are you trading future draft capital to take a quarterback for that staff? But if it works out and it saves their jobs and it's the right move, then like it's a genius move. So it's it comes down to efficacy.
Yeah. And then they also got Abdul too. So, but the second team I also had that I was giving a hat tip to, the Patriots. Again, young quarterback surrounding that guy with some young talent, shoring up the offensive line. You get your guy Will Campbell at four, and then you also draft the center later. So you're going to have, you know, young offensive lineman to pair with your young quarterback. And then Trevion, who I really wish the Commanders could have got him, but him and Quinshon went back-to-back in the second round. But he's electric coming out the backfield. And then also they got Kyle Williams, who might not play a lot just because of they got Stephon Diggs. They got some guys in front of him. But I think down the road, he'll get some.
Yeah, people love that kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's explosive. And I totally agree. They took their medicine where they needed to, going offensive line, getting Will Campbell. And Campbell's probably the safest player in the draft.
Yeah.
Will Campbell and Drake May are going to be teammates for 10 years. I don't know whether Will Campbell will be a guard or tackle, but those two are going to be together for a long time.
We'll be locked in.
Barring something stupid happening. But in terms of who they are, how they compete, mm-hmm. and the talent they have, there's a chance they're going to be traveling to Pro Bowls together for a long time in New England. And then, you know, like you said, they get some extra weapons. Josh McDaniel has had a long history of, think of guys like Rashad White, and all the different James White. Rashad White, also a good receiving back, but yeah. James White, the kid in New England, and all the other backs that have been Ramondre really, really
like
good.
Too.
Yeah. We'll see what they think of Ramondre Stevenson, but like they have a long history in that offense of backs who are really, really productive out of the pass game. And so Trevion Henderson, I think, is a great fit there. My last hat tip, and then we'll get to the head scratchers next. I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh,
for multiple reasons.
Talk to me, Craig. Talk to me.
First and foremost, they finally took their medicine on the interior of the offensive line.
Okay.
This is a team where John Schneider, their general manager, has literally said, like, we can find guards in the fifth round. And they looked at the first round and looked at Gray Zabel, the guard center out of North Dakota State, and said, that dude is way better than what we can find in the fifth round. And whether he is their center of the future or one of their guards of the future, that dude's going to be in the league for probably a long time, and they needed to address that position badly. They did. They then go get Nick Amanwori, who is built like Cam Chancellor, does not play like Cam Chancellor. However, get him in the building, see what he can do, see what Mike McDonald can get out of him. Apparently he and Cam have already been on the phone, so hopefully he can get some tips from the great Cam Chancellor, and maybe, you know, he's going to look like Cam in that uniform. The question is, can he play like Cam did? Elijah Arroyo, really good weapon as a tight end for Sam Darnold or whoever is at quarterback. And speaking of, Torrey Horton is one of a lot of the draft Knicks' favorite wide receivers available still in the fifth round at 166. A guy that, had he not had some injury stuff, might have gone a lot higher in this draft. So I kind of like those guys, especially if you can get them late and in the fifth round at 166. That's excellent for a guy who's probably closer to second or third round talent without some of the injury stuff. And then they took the biggest wild card in the draft, Jalen Milroe. Get him at 93. So they spent a top 100 pick on a backup quarterback. But if he works out, that guy could be really, really good, because his physical talents are so rare. And the thing is, unlike a lot of other quarterbacks in that bag, if he doesn't work out, he is actually good enough at running the football that he could be a bona fide NFL running back. He has sub-4.4 speed. He's big. He's strong. He's powerful. He's agile. Like, him as a ball carrier is worth drafting. And I think you find a role for him this year to supplement Darnold and, you know, some wildcat type of stuff. And then, Kenny, you work on his mechanics and be like, look, man, we don't need you to play, hopefully, for 3 years. Hopefully, Darnold works out for a couple of years for us here. But can we develop you as a passer and just totally break down your mechanics, start over, teach you how to throw the football accurately? And if so, maybe you found your quarterback of the future. And if it doesn't work, he's not useless. He can be a Taysom Hill type. And I think that's an interesting use of a third round pick. And then they took they had a ton of picks late in this draft at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 picks in the final, 130 picks of this draft. So took a bunch of dudes there, take a bunch of swings, see if any of them hit. So Seattle Seahawks, hat tip to you. Nice job. Who left us scratching our head? We'll get to our head scratchers next here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Excuse me, live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. Earlier we were talking about Jeff Ulbrich and whether or not you've ever cost your dad $100,000 and getting fined in a single pop. Luckily, no. And luckily, you told the truth because your pops is watching today in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Shout out to Big Tony. What's up, Haney boy? All right, we're doing our hat tips and head scratchers, or head scratchers and hat tips for the NFL draft. We just gave our two hat tips teams, or a couple of hat tips teams that we liked what they did in the draft. Now time, Anthony Haney, for our head scratchers. Who's your first head scratcher team?
I'm going to have to go with the Houston Texans, to be honest. And I say them just because we saw what transpired when, you know, the Commanders acquired Laremy Tunsil. They lost out on him, and they also had other concerns on the offensive line that I thought they would address, you know, in the first round, like trying to go out here and either trade up for an offensive tackle or simply just get, you know, one of the tackles that falls to you. We ended up, you know, staying pat at 29, and guess what? We got our right tackle or our left tackle of the future. Who knows what the
commander
is.
Maybe both. Maybe he's the right tackle for 3-4 years, then he's the left tackle. We'll see.
Exactly. And then we also saw the Chiefs, who had offensive line problems, specifically at tackle, draft an offensive tackle at 32. So the Texans trading out of the first round, and I mean, I credit them. You know, you end up acquiring more picks. You get some receivers in the second and third rounds to, you know, bolster your wide receiver room now that Tech Dell is hurt. But still, I think protecting CJ should have been of the most important thing on your agenda when it came to this draft. And they just made a head-scratching move trading out of the first pick and not taking Connerly or Josh Simmons. They did get one in the second round, but I still felt as though you should have taken, you know, the best player available at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you think of the player, right?
True.
If the Texans do not grade Josh Connerly the way the Commanders clearly did, where Adam Peters is like, I have to take this kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's so much higher value than where we are on the clock right now. We cannot believe he's here. Yeah, you made a mistake trading out. Yeah. If Adam Peters is wrong about Josh Connerly, I don't know, the Texans made a bad move. So I think it's worth saying, like, this is a head scratch. It's one you stick a pin in. But at the end of the day, they wound up with four top 100 picks and another one at 116. They get one of the running backs there. And with those top 100 picks, they get, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, the two Iowa State receivers, which is kind of hilarious because there's a lot of talk about, you know, they're very different players, but like, which one do you want more? And now we're going to get the chance to see them both in the situation with Houston. And they needed receivers, right? They tried to bring in Diggs last year. It goes poorly, and then he tears his ACL. Mm-hmm. Tank Dell, I think you have to have questions about like his future with the amount he's been hurt and the seriousness of the knee injury that he suffered. And so you get Noel, who's kind of that type of player. You get Higgins, who might be more of a big slot type, but we'll see what he ultimately is. But those two go with Nico Collins. And you get Ariante Ursary, who a lot of people really, really like as an offensive tackle at the 48th pick out of Minnesota. He was OT5 on Dane Brugler's board behind Josh Connerly at OT4. So it just depends on what you think of the players. I think it is worth, you know, pointing out, like, yeah, there were two guys that a lot of people had really, really high grades on in Connerly and Simmons on the board, and they choose to go out. But I also wonder if they see the world or they see their offensive line world in the same way that the Commanders saw theirs last year, where they're like, we had scheme problems. We don't think our talent is as bad. And they've invested some in the offensive line previously, and they haven't gotten anything out of it because their O-line coach wasn't good, and Bobby Slowick clearly didn't know how to do a lot with that position either. And so I wonder if they look at it as we have scheme problems. We have development problems.
Yeah.
We actually don't know that we have a personnel problem. And there's a couple of, I'm trying to remember what team someone was talking about this, where similar thing, I think it was the Bengals, where there was like their defensive line, they've invested a ton in it and haven't gotten a lot out of it. And they're just like, we're going to go with the play better theory. Because we've now changed out coaches. You know, Luan Aromo is a really good defensive coordinator, but his stuff is really complicated. Yeah. And so we have all these young players that we've invested in, and maybe we messed up on the players, but we think we might have messed up on the coaching, and we hope to get better play out of it. So we'll see on that one. My head scratcher that I'm going to go with, and this, I think this head coach and general manager deserve a lot of credit. So I this is again, interesting. Not like you definitely messed this up.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Vikings went into this draft with 4 picks. They ultimately are able to make 5, but they stick at 24 and take Donovan Jackson.
Yeah.
Anthony, what happened to the 25th and 26th picks in this draft?
25th and 26th? Is that the Rams?
It's the Rams and the Falcons. The Falcons wound up at 26.
Oh, yeah. So they get
with the Rams. And then 25 was the Texans that you just talked about.
Yeah.
And they both traded out.
Yeah.
You don't think Minnesota had offers to trade out at 24?
Oh, they definitely could have.
And Donovan Jackson was, by most evaluations, a second-round pick?
Yep.
Why didn't you just trade back with the Giants and take Donovan Jackson there? And if you couldn't get Donovan Jackson, how different is he than the next guy that you could have gotten? Yeah. And maybe they specifically like Jackson. And this is where beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And if they're right and he allows them to change up what they're doing in their running game, which I think is something Minnesota wants to do, then this could be a fine pick. Like, it's hard to like royally screw up an offensive lineman in the first round, because typically – offensive line is one of the easier positions to evaluate because the translation is more direct. There's less projection. And so even if a guy maybe doesn't become a top 10 player of the position, like if he becomes a better than average guard or tackle for them, and he's an answer for them that's reliable for a bunch of years, like, okay, fine. It's a fine pick. I just wonder, for a team that was so desperate, or should have been so desperate, to get more picks and to take a guy that I think most people had a little lower on the board, why you would take that guy there and not try to move back if he's the guy that you want all along.
Yeah.
So again, it's not, I don't think that outside of a team like Atlanta, where you're like, strategically, you have clearly made an error. And we talked about them on Monday. I think it's hard to like be like loser. I mean, even in Atlanta's case, like if it works out and they get 2 great edge rushers, like, they can deal with the champagne problems having to pay him in a bunch of years, but fine. I just, the players that they took at the position, and specifically Pierce trading in for him and giving up next year's one, considering you already took an edge, feels crazy. That's like a head scratcher where I'm like, my head's bleeding because I scratched so hard. But I think Minnesota is more along the lines of like, this doesn't seem like the most efficient use of your resources. Could you have done something a little better, a little smarter?
Yeah, I mean, that everybody's going to be monitoring the Falcons because, again, back-to-back drafts, you make head-scratching moves. So we'll see if it pans out for those guys.
Right. And then same thing, you know, similar thing I would say about the Giants, right? You use future draft capital when your GM and your coach are on the hot seat. That's always a head-scratcher to me. Yeah. But I also don't mind the fit of the player in Jackson Dart. They also didn't give up a lot, frankly. Like, they gave away future capital, but not a lot of it. And if it winds up being the right guy, then cool. That'll work out for them. And congrats to Brian Daboll and Joe Shane for keeping your jobs somehow another year. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we are almost done because the Nats and Phillies are just 15 minutes away from pregame beginning here on the Team 980. Nats on deck coming up. So let's get you wrapped up with real things and a little preview of the night's NBA action next.